Hello, everybody. This is Mick Gringard back with one more ICC Chess FM podcast for the Dresden Olympiad, and there'll just be one more coming after this to wrap up the whole shebang. So if you have any emails, thoughts, comments, questions, suggestions, now is the time to get those in. You can send them to mig@chessninja.com. Without further ado, let's go ahead and check out some exciting results we had in round 10, and we'll get a quick glimpse at four or five of the key games, some of the more interesting positions as well that came along in this 10th round. Of course, this is where the big full press goes for the medals, and it's a pretty tight pack, and really not many teams have a chance. It's not like the old days with board points where you'd have lots of wild swings as teams really went all out to score 4-0 to jump up, although we may see some of that tomorrow because the tie breaks are based on board points largely. So there is a little bit of that blowout factor in play tomorrow, but really it's not nearly as much as in the old scoring system. So really, there are only a handful of teams that have legitimate shots at getting the medals, and a few others have what we might just call mathematical possibilities of doing so, just that would require a remarkable domino chain of good results in their favor, other teams losing, other teams winning by big margins to help them on tie breaks, and that might result in an upset medal. But in general, we have a pretty clear idea of what is necessary to win. So let's take a look, though, first at the results from round 10. And the big match, of course, was between Ukraine and Israel coming into it. Israel 1 point up on Ukraine, so Ukraine, and in clear first, so controlling their own destiny, but it was Ukraine who snatched destiny away by winning that match thanks to a win on board three by Zahar Efimenko over Evgenia Posny. And this one could have gone either way for a while. A lot of tough battles. In fact, in this match, it looked like Israel was doing quite well on several boards at the start. And indeed, that was the case. We'll take a look at one of those in a bit, where Israel could have definitely helped its chances and would still be in first place had they managed to won on the game on board four, where Rojtin was looking better. But we'll take a look at that a bit. But on the top board, Ivanchuk drew with Gelfand, and then Karjakin drew with Royce. So it was left to Efimenko to end up beating Posny in what turned into a queen versus rook. And we've seen that on a couple other top boards just in the past week at the Olympiad. So it's a good reminder to all of us out here to study up those theoretical endgames. We've seen Leko lose a drawable rook versus rook and bishop, although that's very, very tough. But queen versus rook as well, very difficult for a human defender to last very long in these. And here, Posny didn't last very long at all before going down. So, but again, worth taking this as an opportunity to brush up on best defenses and best ways to win, because a lot of these things, if you don't know it and your opponent does, you can really look stupid, basically. And nobody likes that. Losing is one thing. Looking stupid, not good. All right, moving down the other board, Armenia got a boost here. Again, these goofy pairings have, seems like every round, some fairly low-level team gets tossed up by the surf and into the open maw of one of the top teams. It says thank you very much. Some of them have earned it by drawing or even beating another strong team, but some of them just seems to be kind of luck of the pairings, and you end up with these cascades of lower-rated teams beating another lower-rated team, but somehow that works enough to get them up into contention, or at least to be pretenders. And Serbia could certainly be counted in that category, although they have, you know, a strong team of GMs. They were no match for Armenia, who duly disposed of them yesterday 3-1. And you could also put Slovenia in that category. They lost by an even larger score to Russia, the top seed, flexing its muscles there with a 3.5-to-half victory there. So everybody but Kramnik winning. And some of the other early critical match for the medal hunt was England China. And as I said in the podcast after round nine, previewing this round, that although England could match up okay on the top couple of boards with Adams and Short, it was going to be tough for them, giving up a lot of rating points on those last two boards. China comes with a very well-balanced team, 3 2700s, and a couple players who were you know, really playing at that strength as a in fourth and fifth. And Gawain Jones, who's had his ups and downs, but he's given England a fighting chance and done well, was finally ground down on that fourth board by Li Chow. And so that was the decider in that one, another long end-game grind. So England going down to defeat. Meanwhile, Spain took out Bulgaria in a pretty spectacular match. Of course, if you have Shirov versus Topalov, you expect spectacular. And it kind of simmered down fairly quickly, but it was a good slugfest there. A game that even Garry Kasparov seemed impressed by. A nice win by Alexei Shirov over the world number one. And you got to figure maybe Topalov was kind of setting himself up for this. He'd been smashing everybody so easily. And he came in here, he played the Caro Kann of all things. And Shirov, of course, loves to play the advance against the Caro Kann and got a great position against him, and some nice counter blows back and forth, ended up with a winning end game, which he converted quite quickly. So took Topalov down a peg there. And really, again, what I mean by setting himself up for it was that Topalov was doing so well, but he hadn't faced anybody over 2,700 yet, because thanks to mediocre performances by a couple of his teammates, he had not really been able to face any top players, despite Bulgaria's sixth seed ranking in this event. They have been kind of muddling around out on the fringes, out of contention most of the way, and they have now been relegated back to those fringes, while Spain now has an outside medal shot. And another one, very important for a lot of our listeners, if my email is any judge of it, USA beat Germany by the minimum score, 2.5-1.5. Key wins by Yuri Shulman and Hikaru Nakamura, winning with the white pieces, just like you're supposed to do. Gadakamsky drawing solidly with black against Nijdich. And Alexander Onuschuk did lose to Daniel Friedman, but the U.S. had locked up the match. So, well done, boys. And they, too, have an outside medal shot. And my thanks go out to arbiter Jonathan Berry, who came in and corrected my impression that there was no chance at all the U.S. would get a medal. And he pointed out that, well, technically they do. It's not much of a chance. It requires about four things short of witchcraft to get it. But first off, they'd have to absolutely bludgeon the Ukraine tomorrow, the second seed team in the entire event. They would need to beat them by like 3.5 or 4-0 to have any chance at all of winning a medal. So they can even get the silver, apparently, according to to Jonathan's tiebreak calculations, which I have no reason to doubt. So if they beat them by 3.5, they still have a chance to edge in for a bronze, depending on what happens in about three other matches. The Netherlands, et cetera, have to go down. The Netherlands have to win, but then they have to have better tiebreaks than the Netherlands. So they need the Netherlands to beat Israel, but not by too much. So your cheering has to be modulated. If you're rooting for the U.S. to get a medal and you want to go in, root for the Netherlands, but only until they get 2.5. If they get more than that, then they'll have better tiebreaks than the U.S. or something. I'm not really sure. go to the Daily Dirt and read Jonathan's post. That's all I could, if you really want to know this. But of course, we'll all find out, in a few hours, because the round starts abominably early. That's one thing to note here. The round is starting 5 hours earlier. That is at 10 o'clock local time in Germany, and that is 4 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, ICC server time. So do note about that. And of course, Rob Huntington, who's there doing chess for the AP and has been doing chess for Associated Press for a long time, a buddy of mine, despite being from Boston, he points out, of course, he also reminds us that these tiebreaks do get a bit silly. If they get really tight, it starts depending on the combined scores of people you beat, which means you have to go looking down the charts to see how your opponents are doing. Saying, oh, well, wait, they beat Bangladesh, so now it's going to come down to how well Bangladesh does against Thailand. If that makes any sense to you, you should be working for FIDE. Or perhaps maybe AIG or Citibank. So yeah, it's a big mess. But in general, the teams that have the best chance, we're going to take a look at the pairings now. You can see here the top guys, and you've got their match points there in the middle. So that's what they're starting with Armenia and Ukraine in the lead here with 17 match points. They've got the inside track. Now Armenia does have better tiebreaks than Ukraine. So if they both, muddle through with reasonably scored wins, then Armenia will get the gold medal, which, at least speaking personally, I would say they deserve, having faced such a tough field, while some of these teams that you see still in medal contention have barely played any teams higher rated than they are, and or if they haven't beaten them, which I would usually like to consider a requirement for winning a medal, as in beating strong teams, but because of the goofy pairings, that is not necessarily true. So let's take a look at some of the other teams. So again, China-Armenia, that big top matchup there. China still in with a chance for a gold medal as well. Then we have, okay, Lithuania-Germany, but they're out of contention. That's just there because Germany always plays board two as the host nation. Then USA-Ukraine. Again, Ukraine not exactly controlling its destiny. It will definitely win a medal if they win the match. That much we know. They'll have 19. They're guaranteed a gold or silver if they win that match. So that much we know. The same thing goes with Armenia. Again, if they absolutely destroy the U.S. 4-0, they can actually take gold, according to some of these more fantastic tiebreak scenarios. But going in, again, if they win 2.5, Armenia wins 2.5, Armenia wins the gold. That much we know. Okay, so the USA, again, as I mentioned, has outside medal chances with a very big win. Again, they need to win 3.5 or 4 and still get some help, I think, from others. I think if they win 4-0, they may actually edge Ukraine on 17 points. But that would be quite a spectacular result, of course. Nobody's really expecting that. Israel, also good medal chances there at 16. With a win, they're guaranteed a medal. Again, according to my extensive calculations, which I have filling my notebooks and piles and calculators in front of me. Not really, I'm kind of guessing, but that does seem to be the case. And the Netherlands still in with a chance as well. Even Spain. Russia has very good tie breaks, and with a win could also, does not need a lot more help after that, except from the Netherlands to beat Israel. So that's how it shakes down. Again, even Spain, Spain may be the one that has almost no chance at all. I think those are some of the most outlandish ones that I saw. But if Spain, again, USA needs help from all these teams. They need Spain to beat Russia. They need Netherlands to barely beat Israel, etc. So it does get a bit messy. You can see some of the other pairings there. We'll go ahead and scroll down, give you a look at some of the others there. France, Azerbaijan, two highly seeded teams that have not had a lot of success. And again, Netherlands seeded 20, looks quite impressive up there, but to be truthful, they have not beaten any strong teams. They've played a fair number of them. They drew with Azerbaijan, which is, you know, a good result. Azerbaijan's a fourth seed, strong team. And they lost to Armenia. But other than that, they have not beaten any of the top teams. Of course, if they beat Israel, then, okay, they'll have some claim. But as far as getting their shot here, it's not so much that they've beaten a lot of top guys, but they did beat Poland, for example, yes, in the last round, and Kazakhstan before that, and before that was the Philippines and Vietnam. Actually, they lost to Vietnam, so anyway, you tell me if you can figure out why these pairings make more sense than the traditional version. All right, enough of that. Let's take a quick glance even at the, look over here at the at the women's pairings here. Things there as well, quite tight at the top. And we'll take a quick glance there to see what we have lined up. You'll see there Poland in control there with 17 points. And again, they're facing the number two seed, though, Ukraine. That could be tough. Ukraine could claim gold with a win. Obviously, if Poland wins or even draws, they're in great shape there. So they have very good tie breaks as well. So we saw Georgia come back and beat China. So China really fell apart there toward the end. Hard to say why. So many strong young players, but perhaps youth was not well served here as the tension got high, maybe got a little tired toward the end. U.S. still with a medal chance as well there, facing France. So Russia down there, pretty, I guess, again, with a technical chance, but they'd need a lot of help and good tiebreak results to make that happen. And really, they could leave both Russian teams, without any medals at all, which would really be quite something. So let's go back here, and we'll get to some of our games that brought us this far. So let's take a look here first at from that key Israel-Ukraine matchup. And, okay, the key game obviously was the Efimenko-Posny win that decided the match. But, again, your missed opportunities are as important as well. And here, Rojstien had Volokitin under pressure most of the way and seemed to have good winning chances several times and to let up the pressure. And here he has a very nice shot that he missed. And the game ended in a draw a few moves after this position. But I thought you might enjoy taking a glance at this one. Clearly there are plenty of threats. You've got to watch out for that rook lined up against the black king on f8. There are all sorts of tricks here, but one that you might not have noticed is a back rank problem, especially with that rook looking perfectly defensive and useful over there on b8. But this is a nice shot here. Bishop takes b7, and that's just a free pawn. You can't take it. If he takes that, then queen h6 check, and here, and then the rook comes down, clang, and that's trouble. So can't actually take that. So that's just a free pawn right there. The king has to step up, get out of trouble, and the bishop just comes back to a nice square, and suddenly you've got a winning pawn majority over on the queen side for black to deal with, and really that should be a clearly winning position for white. Instead, he played queen h6 check, the king came over, and he tried to break things open, d5, but here Volokitin defends fairly well, although again I think white could have played a little sharper several times. Going for this rather transparent mate, queen e5, no thank you, takes. And there are some more desperado tries in here, but overall looks like he defended pretty well. Bishop g5 is a nice shot there. Of course, the queen can't take, or it's mate on h8, but just rook to e7, and that knight on f8 is doing a great job. As great Bent Larson once said, with a knight on f8, I never get mated. And that is the case here. So he plays e4, but after rook c8, he decides that discretion is the better part of valor. Now suddenly black's getting counterplay there. Rook c2, queen g3 stuff coming, and he decides to go for the draw. And so that left it all up to Efimenko Posny, which, as we know, was eventually won by Efimenko, giving Ukraine the match. So missed opportunity there for Israel, it seems. Let's move along here. And we've gotten to Shulman Baramidze. This was a cute one as well, I thought, just because it wasn't immediately obvious the point of this move that we're going to take a look at. This one, of course, from the USA-Germany match that was won nicely by the U.S. to keep them in medal contention. And Yuri Shulman, the current U.S. champion here, taking on young David Baramidze. Not as young as he used to be. I keep thinking of him as some little prodigy. He's probably 30 by now. Not really. Okay, so here we have the mistake, queen c5, and this, going for the back rank. We'll go ahead and play it out, and he plays g3, and then queen c1 check, king up, and then the queen comes back, trying to keep pressure there on that bishop, and really, clearly, black's king position is just a nightmare of a sieve, and it just took a few nice hammer blows here from Shulman to shake things loose. Rook comes in here. Both protecting and attacking and trying to build things up, and then rook c2 comes over, gets that last piece in on the attack. Suddenly there are back rank problems, everything's going to fall apart, the queen can't leave, or you're just getting mated after the knight goes away. So nicely done, and I was interested to look at, trying to find the decisive blunder, and it appears this queen c5 was it. And there's an interesting, I was curious because of this g3, okay, you don't want to get into back rank trouble, but the reason is as well, black himself could have played g3. And that's a great move that would have helped keep the defensive fight up, kept some counterplay for him. Again, I think black's still in deep trouble. I mean, look at his king position and the white bishops, but still, after takes, now queen c5, it's a different ball game, because now after that check on c1, if the white king comes up to h2, the knight now has that g4 square. So that's, I thought, was a nice example of what the old tactics books used to call a clearance sacrifice, that move there, g3, just to open up that g4 square for the knight to step out with check in some lines. So instructive stuff, I hope. And let's keep moving along here. Here's the really a nice one from Alexei Shirov, showing his class, beating Veselin Topalov, the world number one ranked player, who, despite this loss, will still gain points from this event and will almost surely... Well, it turns out he has another event coming up. He's going to play in the Super Grandmaster event in Nanjing, China. Starting in December 11th, so that will give him another chance to gain or lose points. But he started the Olympiad in a virtual tie with Anand on the live list, and he's been thrashing everybody. He's really pushing up over 2,800 again, but this may knock him back below that, but he should still have the number one spot. Still a nice game here from Shirov. We're just going to play through it. Just shows some cool moves here. You'll see this nice... This is the mistake. Probably G6. Just not moving fast enough, thinking he has time to deal. And we'll see Shirov with a very nice couple of king moves, believe it or not. He wants to hang on to that D-pawn as long as he can. So he just goes... He doesn't care about the A-pawn, though. So he steps up and gets some activity. And that's just great stuff there. Just, okay, take as many pawns as you want. Take that A-pawn with check. See if I care. Step up. And here he's even offers another one. King F4. Take my F2 pawn with check. I don't care. You know, so he just allows him to go crazy. But he can see that he's going to win material on that back rank with those active rooks. So I think Topalov must have severely underestimated the sacrificial path here that white takes. Great stuff from Alexei Shirov. We'll go ahead and play out how the game continued. Rook H7, again, trying to prevent the mess that's coming here on the with those rooks. Here it comes. Knight comes up with check. Okay, of course, takes, and F3. And getting that pawn up out of the way now. Now I was trying to get that pawn running, but H5, now there's another great series of moves. Shirov, an underestimated endgame expert, really known for his flamboyant sacrifices and tactics, but a great, great endgame player. Even included a special endgame section in his first game collection, Fire on Board. H5, okay, not much to do. You could try to block it and just slow things up with G5, but really taking is the only way. So another pawn sacrifice, and now here's the decisive breakthrough. Of course, the black F-pawn is pinned up against that rook on H8, so the pawn moving to G6 is a real threat, so trying to get behind that. And, of course, the king coming up is also a threat. Wants to come up to F6, just take on F7, and then push that G pawn to victory. So trying to come around and block that. Topalov plays rook E2, so now after king F6, you can play rook E6 check and force the white king back. So, because again, if you'd taken, there are some other options, but we'll take a look at those a little bit later. Okay, so he plays rook C8 check, king, rook comes back to block, just takes. King F6, and just great domination. Here it is with black with two passed wing pawns, you know, the A and H, and extra pawns, no less, but is helpless against the threat of G6 winning. So tries to get something going here. It takes, okay, pins the pawn for a moment, but okay, just rook takes, and that is it. Next is, there's nothing black can do about rook H7. For example, just being one of the ways here that white can win quickly. So, beautiful game from Alexei Shirov, getting a round of applause from the world's highest-rated spectator, Garry Kasparov, who still keeps an eye on the elite, of course, and always appreciates a good game. So, nicely done by him, and that also won the match for Spain and kept them in medal contention. We'll move along here to this one. I just thought was cute as well, a little bit of... a little shuffling over here. This is not going well for white. It has kind of a menacing look to it, but Jan Smeets, the young Dutch player, seems to have it all under control. So rook to h4 here, giving the knight enough protection. Again, hoping to set up some sort of shot with knight f6, but here knight d6 challenging the knight. Obviously not afraid of knight f6, and we'll see why here in just a second. Again, this is one of those sort of the old, the old question when they used to ask chess masters, how many moves ahead do you see? You know, that stupid question, because it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, they all had various witty answers. And it was Reti who said, just one further ahead than my opponent. And that's kind of what we have here. And Capablanca's was one, but it's always the best move, etc. This one seems to be more of the one more. Okay, so takes. Check here. Discovered check. Very nice. Takes. Okay, queen g5. Now we've got some pressure. Okay, it looks like we're going to have a mate here. But he takes on h4. Not afraid of this check. And why not? Here, check. Oh, maybe it's just a perpetual. And no, it's not a perpetual. Queen g6. Take my queen with a pawn, see if I care. Very nice. And that ends. He didn't have to be so fancy. The computer says he could have blocked with the bishop, but this is quite a pretty sacrifice, especially for the last move of the game. White just resigns. He's given up so much material that white can just give up the queen and then get it right back on g4. So after takes, check, take, take, and black keeps the extra piece. Thank you. So take, for example, here, and that's just an extra knight with no hope. So very nicely done. If you want to repeat that one real quickly, again, it looks like he's going to set up a perpetual here, sacrificing the rook, but there it is, queen g6, exclam. So nice one there for the Dutch, who win, and again, keep their metal hopes alive, however obscure they are and how much math they require to calculate. And this last bit here, Carlsen watch, as ever, we like to keep an eye on the young young Norwegian superstar. I had Dutch on the brain there after the Smates game. He really just walked Jonathan Rausen off the board here, and very nicely, just threat after threat in this game. Very nice conclusion here. Rausen grabs this pawn on a5 and really pays a price for it. It doesn't look like white has much to worry about, except, okay, that d4 pawn isn't particularly pretty thing to look at, especially the way it kills his a1 bishop. But as far as his king looks, fairly safe, no? But watch what happens after he grabs that pawn, and how much pressure black gets here in this attack. A really beautiful attack conducted by Magnus Carlsen. So, okay, how do I get my queen back into the game? Queen comes up, and with centralization and tempo, okay, queen retreats. And now we see how much trouble white's getting into. He's really running short on squares here. Queen f3, okay, d3, here comes the pawn, cutting off even more squares. And that's a principled move. Again, it opens up that bishop on a1, but again, you have to give to get, as they say. You can't just sit back on your advantages. So Carlsen's calculated he'll get enough for this. So driving the rook back, okay, now again, just wedging that pawn down there, creating all sorts of threats on its own. And now Carlsen goes to work elsewhere. Queen comes over to g6, and again, he's got some working on some threats over on this side of the board. He's going to bring the bishop back over to threaten the queen. We'll see. So bishop come trying to challenge that bishop. Oops. Okay, now I've got discovery threats. And here's probably the fatal mistake. Again, I think white's already in serious trouble, but this move here, this queen to e3, gives black a critical tempo for his attack in just a moment. We'll see how it works out. Okay, another threat of discovery with rook e8, and that queen is just out of moves and just tries to cover up, but smash. And now suddenly all the black pieces spring to life, and that pawn becomes a factor. Everything's a factor, really, and that white bishop looks a bit silly on f1. So takes, and now f4, and there's the key tempo, is that if the queen had retreated to e2, and this wouldn't be such an issue, because the thing you have to look out for, the reason that move is a problem, is that it opens up the line of attack from the black queen all the way to that rook hanging there on c2. So suddenly that is very vulnerable to discovered attacks. Anytime that knight moves, that rook on c2 hangs. So and white doesn't have time to deal with it because the queen's under fire. So again, if the queen had been on e2, it would be white's move here, essentially. I mean, again, there would be other chances for black, but that this particular idea would not have worked. So now the queen goes to e2, but it's black's move, and of course Carlsen keeps the pressure on, coming back here with threats on the diagonal. It's got threat of checks, so really has to try to deal with those threats somehow. And queen c6, okay, obviously the threat of mate on h1, but also threats, as we'll see here in a moment, with checks on f3. So trying to just prevent that, give the king some room to run. Don't want to get mated over there. So f3 takes, tries to run for his life here. And now again, with all sorts of nasty threats on e4, with the knight coming back. Okay, just basically at this point, I think Carlsen's just trying to stir up any sort of trouble. But Carlsen isn't buying it. Just goes ahead and checks. queen takes. Okay, you get your rook, but I pick that pawn off with check. Actually, I don't need that pawn on d7. I'm going to mate you instead. And after bishop a6 check, he resigns. Technically, he's not getting mated. He's just losing every single one of his pieces. King f3 takes with check. Thank you. King g4, queen c2, and that would have been enough. But this is the final position, actually. So really a beautiful attack, one well worth playing through how well Carlsen handled that initiative with the black pieces. So nicely done for him. He'll still have a pretty good result here. Norway didn't live up to their early successes, but okay, they were a pretty low-rated team overall after you leave their toweringly high-rated first board. Carlsen at 2786, I think number 3 or 4 in the world coming into this event. So that's it for the games and for our podcast today. We already have the pairings, and even the board pairings are up there. So, and the on the pairing site, so you can even know. Of course, just about everybody's brought their A team, as you might imagine. This is no time to rest anybody. It's the final round, playing for all the marbles. So we'll see in that key China-Armenia match. You've got Wang Yue versus Aronian on board one. You've got Kamsky Ivanchuk in USA-Ukraine. You've got Gelfand Van Vele in the Netherlands-Israel match. You've got Kramnik Shirov. That's a classic, going back a long ways on that one. A lot of great games played between them, and everything at stake here. All these teams down there have to win to keep their medal chances. So should be a good one, and we'll be watching it live on ICC. If you're not in Europe, that's going to mean really early. Again, this final round starts at 10 o'clock local German time. That is 4 o'clock in the morning Eastern Standard Time, and of course 1 a.m. You may as well just stay up and watch it if you're in California or Hawaii or something. You can just stay up late tonight and catch it. So we'll, of course, we'll have one last podcast wrap up here. If you have any comments, your opinions, your shout-outs, your celebrations, your congratulations, I'll be happy to read those all on the air in our last podcast coming up tomorrow after this final round. So until then, this has been Mick Gringard of ChessNinja.com for ICC Chess FM.